Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's almost time for summer, and for that purpose, we brought back, and hopefully we'll many, many more times again, but for now, Mimi Chenfeld for 46 years. She's
54.
Oh, my gosh. I had an old resume, I guess.
Right.
54 years. Has taught teachers, parents, and children of all ages around the world how to have fun learning creatively. Welcome to the show, Mimi.
Thank you, dear.
Sorry about that mistake.
Sorry, I wish it were 46. Have a 36. Let's do 26.
I say 10.
So immature.
It doesn't matter. I always say that about myself, too. We wanted to talk last time you were here. We didn't get to it, but that's okay. We were going to talk about spring break, and that flew by. The time flew by, and we didn't get to it. But summer, you know, yawns ahead of us, and we want to talk about what to do. I was thinking, does it even matter what kids do in the summer? Can't they just chill out? They've already been in school for 9 or 10 months or whatever, been in sports, doing this and that. Can't they just chill?
What do you mean by chill?
That's the question. What do you mean by chill?
what do you mean by chill?
Well,
I don't know, because I'm not a chill-out person. You know, I'm too hyper. But what do you mean by chill, Ann?
I think a lot of kids think it means just sitting in front of the TV set. You know, back in the olden days, there were only 2.5 channels, so
right.
There wasn't a lot to do. But now there's just so much more. There's television, there's computer games,
yeah,
there's video
every
games.
Every one of those things is sit. And, you know, we need our kids to be active, and we know from doctors, even the pediatricians are getting in on it. You know, even the American Medical Association is getting in on our kids have to exercise, our kids have to be active, our kids have to take care of themselves, because we're going to have a nation of couch potatoes that are just, you know, spreading their couch potato ship, you know, all over the
potato-ness.
Potato-ness. And it's really, I really worry about it. I deeply worry that our kids are not going to be strong and healthy and active and alert. So I'm against, quote, chilling that way. I'm against chilling that way anytime, never mind just the summer.
Some folks would say that, well, my kids are out exercising, they're on a sports team, they're doing this and
okay.
that. But there's a difference between actively recreating and sports competition.
Right.
What is that difference?
Well, first of all, there's a whole difference in culture. This culture of competition is you know, a completely different culture from the culture of doing something for its own sake. Let me clear my throat. I don't know. I sing soprano until I come to this program, and I'm like bass. I have no idea what happens.
I bring you down with my voice.
I get deep. I get really deep. But but to me, the joy of doing things for their own sake is on a higher level as far as beneficial for most kids, because once you start the competition thing, that's a whole different area. You know, I just have a friend whose kid was on a team that just lost every game. I mean, the kids lost every single game this season. So this is not a joyful experience. This is, you know, this is, I guess, a challenge to staying with the team no matter how it's doing and commiserating with that team and feeling like failures and feeling, you know. So that whole winning and losing is a different scoring. But I think that this country has gotten, you know, just way overboard on everything is competitive, you know. I mean, you sing a song, you're on American Idol, you're thrown off. You want to dance, you're thrown off. You want to be on a reality show, you're thrown off. You know, you're on the island, everybody stabs you in the back and you're thrown off. So you win or you lose. So I think that whole area is just, you know, permeating our culture. So we have to counter it.
But does it affect kids to the point where sometimes they just don't want to take those kind of risks and try to be artistic or explore those kind of avenues because they don't want to get thrown off the island?
Well, this is exactly the point I'm saying, that there are whole, you know, there's a whole way of being that really celebrates doing things for their own sake, not to get a score and not to win or not to lose. And, you know, I think this is what we're talking about with the summer and with kids. You know, the simplest, you know, the song, and I won't sing it in my soprano voice, "'Tis a gift to be simple, 'tis a gift." You know, the song, we sing it together, and You'll keep the tune better than I will. But, you know, the simplest things can be the best things, and you don't have to spend fortunes to have a rich and really quality summer for children. The parks are fabulous with programs. You go to any of the metro parks, they have their whole booklets on hikes and exploring and looking for owls. And, you know, Slate Run Farm Park is open all the time, and kids can participate, and there's no cost for that. The libraries have programs almost every day. Every library in the whole area has a magician or the turtle. I'm doing 13 libraries myself. So, I mean, I know firsthand that they're wonderful, wonderful programs. You don't have to sign up. You can just come with kids of any age. The parks, the zoo is fabulous if you get a membership, or children don't go as expensively as others. There are many, many things kids can do. You know, even projects that they decide themselves, even based on their own interests. And families that just do simple things with them find out that if you really use your senses, you really enjoy, you really take a walk and look around and notice things. We were taking a walk. I have a friend, you know, friends walk with me. And walk, just taking a daily walk, we saw a snapping turtle on the path. That took 20 minutes just standing around the sand. I saw a little baby deer, the dearest little deer. I mean, so just take a walk and look, take any of the nearby parks and see what you see and see what you find and explore and take sandwiches and have a picnic. But they're really easy things to do with children.
Columbus Zoo, sometimes people get overwhelmed. They go there and it's just this big hairy deal, particularly if they go on the weekends. It's a huge grind, mm-hmm. and you've got to, and you know, if you only go a couple times a year, you feel like you have to see everything. When you get a membership,
and you can't see everything in one day.
Well, not in any kind of enriching way, I don't think.
Listen, you're just in front of the elephant for an hour alone.
Right.
There's an hour there, and then the new baby.
Wherever there's a baby.
Yeah, the new baby monkeys, and I haven't seen the polar bears.
I haven't seen them yet.
But you know, you don't always have to spend money. You can go and take a picnic and spend the whole day. You know, well, I go to Black Lick, or I go to the bike path, or sometimes Blendon Woods. But we are so lucky to have those places, and take kids to that Slate Run mm-hmm. farm, mm-hmm. and they can stay
the working farm.
Mm-hmm. The working farm. I took grandchildren who were like 10 years old when they visited, and they wouldn't leave the corn husking. They stayed and husked corn for like an hour and a half. They couldn't stop. These are Chicago kids. They're like, whoa. I said, how about we look at these other things? No, can we stay longer? So, you know, our kids need those simple things that are really terrific things. And going back to the, you know, not every kid can be on a team. I'm not knocking teams. Mm-hmm. I am not knocking teams. But I'm just knocking such emphasis on the teams and the competition that some kids always feel like they're, you know, failures, or their team really, as the kids say, my team sucks. I hate my team, you know, I don't want to be on my team. They should have experiences where they succeed. The arts are fantastic. You can go to the Cultural Arts Center and see what everyone is doing, and that alone is a trip.
You know, people talk about how kids now these days are being forced to choose a sport pretty early, that, you know, because everything gets specialized earlier and earlier and earlier. But in the process of that, they're often forced to give up not just other sports, but other activities like music and other pursuits that are considered extracurricular now.
Why do children have to choose between those things? Why should music not be part? I mean, if a kid loves music, that's a lifelong love, you know, and to de-emphasize it or to discourage it because they have to choose something else. Where is it written? I mean, is this written in stone on Mount Sinai that they have to have one choice and that's what they follow and they can't deviate from that? It's like a commitment that they have to make way before they need such commitments made. I think if a child loves music, that music will be part of that child's life for his or her whole life. His or her whole life. I mean, I think that we have this very frivolous culture. Like, this year I'm going to play my flute, and next year I'm going to play soccer. And the year after that, I'm going to learn chess, and then I'm going to be through with chess, and then I'll join the baseball team. I mean, it's not like I love baseball, I'm going to stay on baseball and play my flute. You know, why can't we, you know, why can't we just have a rich life without making those kind of commitments? I think it stresses the kids out even more. And I think families should encourage, you know, if a kid loves music, and a kid, whatever the instrument or just music in general, but has to choose a sport because that's the way it is in his or her school, I think a family should say, you keep that music in your life. That's important. You may be choosing the sport, but don't you dare let that music go. It means too much to you. Does that make sense?
It makes sense to me as someone who, you know, chose music and tried to do sports. I'm just too short.
And tried, yeah. You can choose a short sport.
There, well, and,
like the limbo.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny you mentioned, I used to love the limbo. Now I get it. Yeah, no, that's right. It was easy for me.
You know, I do the limbo. When it gets, you know, low, I jump over it.
I never thought of that.
Oh, I say I'm a dyslexic limbo dancer.
It's all backwards. We're going to take a short break right now. If you have a question or comment for Ma'am Chudfeld, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do you have an idea for something to do with your kids this summer? Share it with us. We'd love to hear it. If you have some questions about places to go and things to do, Ma'am can tell you, you know, what she thinks about that, how she thinks you could best utilize the environment. 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. You're a continuous listener to WOSU, so be a continuous supporter by becoming a sustaining member today. As a sustaining member, your gift automatically renews, saving you and the station time and money. Give $20, $50, or $100 a month, and your sustaining membership will also help to keep on-air fundraising to a minimum. To become a sustaining member, call 1-866-897-9678 or go online to wosu.org/sustainer. And thank you for your support. It's 69 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:19 this morning. Clouds today and a chance of showers, maybe a thunderstorm this afternoon, a high of 85. A few clouds tonight and a low of 63 degrees. Some sunshine for Wednesday. There's still a slight chance of rain and a high of 85. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour is Mimi Chudfeld. She has been teaching teachers, parents, and children of all ages around the world for 54 years. And it doesn't look like it could be a day over five, but there you go. She might sing for us later today on the program. And
I promise I won't.
We'll see if we can cajole her into singing a little bit. But for now, you know, you had you worked through the Museum of Art for many, many years, couple 20 years, and collected poems from your students from that work. Was that
poems and pictures?
And pictures, and you have some of those poems here. And
yes.
I was wondering if you would read some.
Oh, you
for
know
us.
What, Anne? Thank you so much. You know, people forget how our children are hungry for creative experiences. They're hungry for the arts, not in a stressful way, not in a product way, but in a process way. The playfulness of the arts as healing, the arts as ways of expressing, the arts as ways of enjoying and celebrating and learning. I mean, the arts should just be part of everyone's life. And I think, you know, as much as we can support and be advocates for the arts and education in a community, this is one of our biggest, easiest causes. You know, it's like, let's support air for breathing, you know. let's support beautiful clouds in the sky. Okay, let's support that cause. To me, it shouldn't even be a cause. It should be the way it is. But this was a program called Departures, and it was it was a well, I was with it for 20 years, and I think it was about 24 years in the running, and it involved 10 fifth grades from Columbus Public Schools a year, and a commitment from those 10 fifth grades and their teachers to participate, and docents and the museum staff. And basically, we did poetry. I was one of the poets in the program. Poetry in the classroom, poetry sessions. And then the kids had extra docents coming to work with them on exhibits that were going on in the museum. And then the kids culminated. Every fifth grade had its own trip to the museum where they wrote poetry based on the art, inspired by the art at the time, whatever was up, whatever the exhibit, and sketched. And then we took all the books, all the journals from all the children from 10 fifth grades, and we selected one sample from every child, so no child was left out, and made beautiful books at the end that were just really only just excerpts. So it wasn't like a child's whole journal, but every child was represented. So I guess I just brought one of the books. I just grabbed it from one year. What year was it? Oh, let me see if I can find the year. Oh, the year was 2004. And I just opened to a page, and I just thought, wouldn't that be fun to hear? Just, these are fifth graders.
Definitely.
We were playing with the word once, O-N-C-E. Once is a terrific word to play with kids, with storytelling. I mean, if you're taking a walk with your children, say, I'm going to say the word once, and you guys go on, and we keep adding a sentence to it and see what story we come up with. Because the minute you say once, you have an idea. You can't just go, hi, Anne, once. It's a conversation stopper.
It's not a sentence ender. Right. It's a sentence starter.
I'll never forget, I was with a first grade class doing creative writing years ago, and we were talking about the wonderful idea of once upon a time. And so the kids started to write their own little stories, and one kid actually wrote once, P-O-N-D, a time. In that little boy's mind, that's what he thought once upon a time was, once upon a time, which I thought was just terrific, because that's what he heard.
And did he tell a story about a pond?
Oh, yeah. He said, once upon a time, there was a witch, you know, whatever, whatever. And he wrote his little story. But isn't that the cutest yes. thing? You have to see it. Can you picture it?
Oh, sure.
Anyway, this is a Joe Saffold, who's now, if this is 2004, you figure out how old he is now.
He's a high schooler probably
6 years
by now.
Later,
yeah.
He's 16. Mm-hmm. Once I went to Italy. No, I didn't, but I'd like to. You see that I'm using once, like once upon a time, and once my friend came over. Once I love the word because it snowballs into something else. Once. I love that.
That's great.
And then I just read you another one, that we were using the word sometimes. Sometimes is another really, really terrific word, because you can't just go, Anne, sometimes. So these are words that just have to be followed by something. So this is really good for the mind. I call it aerobics for the mind. So here's Katie Ballard from Parkmore School. Sometimes I feel like a fairy with no wings, still flying over the world of my world, stopping to bring goodness and happiness to those who have nothing. I talk with nature, birds, cats, dogs, fish, the trees. My mind stops, and then I listen.
I love that.
Aren't they beautiful?
Yes.
I love them. I mean, I love the kids. Oh, here's a really sweet one. I just grabbed this. So this is Daniel Sinclair from Trevitt Elementary. Sometimes I feel like a branch on a tree, trying to hang on to stay with my pack. Sometimes I feel like a new clock, trying to tell time, which has not been set.
Ooh.
So, I mean, the kids are ready. They're eager. They're you know, once they taste the joy of the creative process, which it belongs to all of us, but we give it up so early, they are just ecstatic and fall in love with
whatever
the
happened
arts.
To that program.
Well, I guess you know the museum's under construction.
Oh, that's right.
And they were evaluating everything, and you know, I guess it went Listen, it had a really good run. It had a really
20
good
years
run.
Is a good run.
More than 20. I was with it 20, so it was about 24 years. Carol Genshaft started it, and she's now, I think, education director of the museum. So it was one of her babies.
We have an email from Alex, who writes, involve your kids in growing their own vegetables and take them to UPIC farms and orchards and vineyards.
Yes.
Let them better understand where their food comes from. Right now, they could be picking strawberries, and soon other berries will be ready for picking.
Oh, Alex, that is so thank you. I meant to include that in my list. Absolutely. And you can go berry picking and apple picking, and you can grow things. And kids, even if you don't have land around you to grow, you can grow things in pots. As a matter of fact, most everyone I know now is giving up sometimes on their vegetable gardens because all the little, you know, our little animal friends are sharing. I just spoke to a friend who's growing everything in big pots because the rabbits were eating some of his, you know, treasures out there. But absolutely, and growing things is wonderful for the children. And, you know, just looking at butterflies and going to the conservatory and seeing the butterflies. And I just think the whole world of nature and the outdoors is becoming prominent again in the awareness of people. In education and in the literature, it's like we need our kids to be outdoors. They're sitting there, as Anne described, couch potatoes with their little thumbs getting bigger and bigger from thumbing and texting and tweaking and quacking.
Yeah, those thumb muscles are
twittering.
Yeah
they have well. Four fingers that are turning into webs and one big thumb and minds that are like cluttered with tweeting and twittering and quacking and oinking and mooing and whatever else you call it. And it's literally cut down on imagination, cut down on their own awareness, their own involvement in other, you know, in outdoors and nature and environment. It should become part of their lives. We take a walk every day. We go out, and we don't need to be out for 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can be out for, as we said before, before the program, I would rather have my child go for a walk with you around the block. If you stop and look and listen and pay attention and sing on the way and laugh and talk and notice things and discover things and compare things and remember things as you go and see objects and find surprises, I would rather have that child go around the street with you than go to Europe for a month with somebody who's narrow and rigid and strict and formalized and preset. That walk around the block would make a lot more difference in your life than going to Europe.
We just went to Holmes County for overnight.
Oh.
And brought our camper, you know, and just camped out.
Isn't that the Amish country?
We saw a lot of Amish and spent overnight at a friend's property. They invited us for the night and the next day. And, you know, our 14-year-old was constantly entertained by the nature. And it did remind me that, and I did bring my binoculars, and it made me think of another guest we have on, Tom Burns, from the observatory, the
astronomer.
Yeah, and it made me think about how much he loves teaching children about the stars and about the night sky.
You know, kids love
That's
stories.
That's free, too.
That's right. I'm glad you included that, Anne. And, you know, also, you don't have to go to Holmes County to stay over. It's an hour and a half drive. It's absolutely fabulous. And see a culture that is so different than ours. I love it. I mean, I want them to do that. I want them to keep – I don't want to do it, but I want them to do it. You know, I want to go.
The drive itself was wonderful, just getting out of town and going somewhere different and just looking out the window of the car.
It's beautiful, and it's great for the kids to see. You know.
If you're just joining us, my guest is none other than Mem Chunveld. She is author, educator, and we heard some poetry, maybe hear a little bit more later, because I really enjoyed hearing that. We have an email now. If you'd like to email us, go to allsides@wosu.org, or you can call us at 614-292-8513, or you can post something on Facebook at All Sides, our Facebook page. and just rolled her eyes. Here's an email from Mark. He says, I was interested in your comments about the lack of music-related instruction in today's schools. I am very interested in helping students learn to use music technology, including computer software, to create and record their own songs and music videos. I am willing to do this on a volunteer basis, perhaps in after-school sessions. Would you have any suggestions on whom I should contact at local high schools and how I should approach them to offer my services?
Gee, Mark, I wish you were on the regular telephone. We could talk, but okay. It sounds like what you're doing is really fabulous for kids and right on target with them. I would probably call the music coordinator of any of the school systems. The after-school programs, I think almost all the schools have after-school programs, the recreation centers, because a lot of the kids, and now that they reinstalled the funding.
Libraries.
And the libraries, absolutely.
Because they have computers.
And any place where they have after school or programs for kids, I would definitely, especially now that school is out, you could probably get those people work almost all year. They might have 2 weeks off or three, but the administration people work. And I would definitely try to reach any of them to see if you can get a program going, cultural arts center, recreation centers, churches that have after-school programs. I think you would definitely find more than one who would welcome what you're offering, and very important that what you're doing, very important. And lots of good luck.
614-292-8513, and Alan, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thank you. Mimi, congratulations on your work, and thank you for some 4 years of inspiration.
Oh, hi, Alan. Thank you.
That's how long I've watched you doing your work.
Oh, well, my work is pretty suspicious. It's more like enjoying and playful and happy. But you can call it work.
And how do we get the schools to recognize that the arts are how kids learn?
Well, you know, Alan, this is what I think. I think parents and families have to be advocates. You know, we know what we know, and when schools threaten to cut a budget and cut the arts from the budget, they need to hear from community more than, you know, big mouth people like me who's like constantly chirping away at them.
But it's important, Mimi, because a lot of people, the only people that talk about it are people who actually have kids in school.
That's right. But those are the most important people.
Right, but the whole community helps pay for it.
Oh, absolutely.
The rest of us pay the taxes, after all.
But, Alan, years ago, this is going back years, because we're in Columbus 40 years. I'm in Columbus 40 years. Early years, they were going to cut a big arts program, a big artists, you know, arts impact program. And I think it was Indianola School. It might have been all the schools. And if I tell you, the Board of Education meeting that was going to decide that, the Board of Education looked up and saw hundreds of families and children with signs, with public speaking going down an hour and a half of people putting in for 3 minutes each. They took one look at that, and they did not make the cuts. So when they see, when they hear, and when you need to write, you need to call, you need to make voices heard, this is the most important thing that we can do as a community in general and as a family of a school that's going to cut the arts in particular. You've got to open your mouth. We've got to open and be heard. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I was at that meeting.
You were at that meeting?
Yes.
So you remember.
Waving a sign.
You remember that. So,
oh, yeah.
And you remember it worked.
It worked.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they have to see the faces of people when they do, because that really is a power.
Exactly.
Alan, thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye, Alan.
You know, I don't get the idea that school administrators want to cut the arts. If anybody, administrators and teachers, they know.
They know, but you know what? We can know things and know them, but we don't do them. Let me just give you an example of knowing, but don't do it. And there's a whole thing called developmentally appropriate practices, which is the way young children learn. All the research supports, quote, developmentally appropriate. All the research says young children learn in direct experiences, active learning, initiating their own learning, hands-on, playful. That's how young children learn. Moving, involving, doing, touching, feeling, etc. That's how young kids learn. We are doing the absolute opposite. We are doing the opposite. We're taking kindergarten kids, giving them worksheets, sitting them down, taking the play out of the room, which is how they learn. They learn by constructing. They learn by trying on clothes and pretending that they're a store or pretending that they're grown-ups or pretending they're a fan. They learn by having the kitchen in their room. That's all coming out of kindergarten. So it doesn't matter what we know and what we do. It's a lot of bull. Why pay for more research when you already know what the research says?
614-292-8513. Or you can email us like Matt did at allsides@wosu.org. Matt writes, what was the name of the book that was just read from and where can I get it?
Oh. Matt, that is so sweet.
I love
of you.
Those poems that you read.
I just opened the book. You see me. I'm opening the book. Matt,
it's not for
every
sale.
Year we had a Departures beautiful book that was put together by museum staff and the poets who worked with the kids. I was one of the poets and over the years. And we just went through every journal of every single child. So that's 10 fifth grades, say 25 kids in each. You can do 250 journals. And we just picked one either illustration or poem from each child. When I came on board the program, I said, they said, well, what would you like to see? And I said, I want every child to be represented, not just here are the best poems. So every child in the program for 20 years is represented. They may have some of these books. If you call the museum, they may have some extra ones. I might have some extra
Could you
ones
buy
at
them?
Home. You can't buy
okay.
them because they're each. Oh, I forgot to say the most important thing. The museum sponsored a celebration. We had a poetry and art celebration. The museum, all those years, stayed open one night late only for the Departures kids. We had a poetry festival in the auditorium where every grade read 15 minutes of their poems, some together, some as a group, and so forth. In the auditorium, refreshments and the exhibits opened, so the hundreds of parents and families came every single time. The kids dressed in their most beautiful. The first year, I just wore my jeans and a nice shirt. Kids were coming in looking like First Communion and weddings. I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't have time to go home and change. It was so important to them. And then that night, they also got, each child got a book. So
they must have loved
have
it.
A
it's
book.
A beautiful book. It's
yeah.
very nicely done.
Here's one. I'll read you. This is out. I'm just open to it. So the book is a combination of poems they wrote at the museum from the art, inspired by the art, and poems we wrote together in the classroom. Here's one from Allison Barnes, Kenwood School, called Last Afternoon. By the way, I see the kids everywhere. Everywhere I go, ma'am, I was in Departures. Now I'm in college, and I'm still writing. I still keep a journal. You know, it's like the music child. It's part of your life forever. Here's a poem I just opened to called Last Afternoon. This poem that I write is about me, my life, myself. I am a stone. Love this life as much as you love yourself. The child that comes every day keeps me in her pocket, and then she threw me in the lake just last afternoon. I visited the starfish. I floated past a penny. I stopped for just a moment. I don't know where I'm heading to. A fish flew me in the air. I landed with a pop, just as a car had to stop. From the car, I went to a kid who took me in to a room just last afternoon. This came because I had these little stones that I gave the kids that day. I gave each kid a little stone to write something special on and keep forever. Because stones are kind of like memory, you know, symbols. And that was the stone. From the car, I went to a kid who took me into a room just last afternoon.
We have to take another short break, but I want to hear more of Mim Chenfeld. We will return in a few minutes on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is Terry Gross. Often when I'm interviewing people on Fresh Air, they give me a different way of looking at the world.
We all thought our bike was cold in the rain, that our fish was lonely in a fishbowl, that a leaf would be afraid of heights when it fell. It's just the way we looked at things.
Join us for new ways of looking at things on Fresh Air.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on today's edition of Fresh Air, remembering actor Dennis Hopper, who died Saturday at the age of 74 from prostate cancer. That discussion begins at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. See a new lineup of public affairs programming on Friday nights on WOSU TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week, followed by Columbus on the Record at 8:30. Continuing at 9 is the McLaughlin Group, and at 9:30 PBS presents Need to Know, a new program with an innovative broadcast and web approach to news gathering and reporting. Watch the new public affairs lineup every Friday night beginning at 8 on WOSU TV. It's 69 degrees in downtown Columbus. Clouds today with showers and thunderstorms and a high of 85. A few clouds tonight, a low of 63. Some sunshine for Wednesday. There is a slight chance of rain, a high of 85. And a good chance of rain looking ahead to Thursday, a high of 79. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Mim Chenfeld. She's an author and educator. She likes to have fun and likes to teach other people how to have fun while they learn creatively. We have a couple calls. You want to take those calls now?
Sure.
Okay. 614-292-8513.
Only if they're good calls.
They're always good calls when I have you on. 614-292-8513. Or you can email us, of course, at allsides@wosu.org. And Jerome, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, Jerome.
Hi. I've heard you speak many times, and to be honest, I'm always a little confused about what age groups you're talking about. You know, what age, you know, what does, you know, developmentally appropriate mean at what age groups? Are you suggesting play can be an appropriate learning tool for any age, or do you agree there's some point where you just got to force rote memorization of some, you know, higher concepts?
You know, Jerome, that's a really, really good question. So thanks, sweetie, for asking that. Let me just say that the developmentally appropriate practices that I talked to Ann about, well, that was mostly centered around young children. And they call that developmentally appropriate practices. And it's compiled and organized and published by the National Association for the Education of Young Children. And it's out there. It's out there. But, of course, as I said, it's ignored. But, you know, in general, it's ignored. Okay. But the idea of playfulness in education and learning, it has to do with creativity, too. So I'm not talking about just a frivolous play or, you know, or just a bored play, but just the whole, you know, playfulness is part of the creative process, which is a kind of a flexibility and openness to new, you know, new outcomes, new experiences, spontaneity. I mean, it's a whole complex of you know, role-playing, imagination, imaginative problem-solving. So it's not just, you know, like a limited view of play. So playfulness, to me, is part of every age. It's not... When I, you know, I do a lot of work. I have a course at Audubon I teach every year called The Arts Across the Curriculum. I teach it every summer, and it's for a teacher of any age kids. So we have teachers of early childhood and high school teachers all together, because the concepts have to do with how you look at learning And if you look, and I'm not saying as the kids get older, there's a, you know, lots of information they have to absorb and they have to remember. So the combination of learning, you know, with paperwork and study and, you know, of course. But when you take the, you know, the joyful aspect, the excitement out of it, the imaginative way they can learn that's outside the, you know, the box, when you take that away, I think you limit the levels of comprehension and the levels of long-lasting learning. So to me, the play is part of every age and every subject. You know, there was an article a couple of years ago about the science professor at Ohio State, and I wrote to her, who decided to use the OSU marching band to express certain scientific concepts she was trying to get across with molecules and chromosomes and so forth. And there was a whole article about how the kids just were droving to her class. They loved her class because she used different ways of, you know, learning the same concept that they could have learned in a textbook. But, you know, the multiple intelligences that we know are part of every person, say that we all learn differently. So some people will learn, like, here's the body of information, learn it, memorize it, remember it, and some people go, got it. And some people just won't learn it that way. So
yeah.
Play has got to be part of every age and every subject. That's how I feel.
May I ask you another question along those lines?
Of course, honey, of course.
I've heard from quite a few teachers say things like, well, they're no longer teaching handwriting because email has replaced the handwritten letter. And my response is that that's not empirically based. For all we know, handwriting may be integral to the development of the brain and learning, integrating eye, hand, and intellectual concepts. And I also hear teachers say things like, well, you don't need to learn how to write a bibliography because the computer does it for you now. There's kids who can't read an analog clock. There's kids who can't tie their own shoes. It seems to me these aren't simply things that schools can do away with because they don't have time for it. They are integral to the developmental cognitive development of a child. Am I wrong?
Jerome, of course you're not wrong, but, you know, I have not heard that handwriting is out of the schools.
Because
they teach it for about a year, cursive. I mean, they teach it when they're really young.
And they don't teach cursive.
They did for a year for my kid in Worthington. Interesting.
They give it about a week or two. I actually said to one teacher, does that mean that spell check makes learning how to spell irrelevant? And does that mean that voice recognition software makes English teachers irrelevant?
You're talking to the most untechnical person in America. I mean, like, I feel like I'm an alien dropped into this culture. I'm going right back to my cave and waiting for fire to be discovered. But I am painting on the walls and drumming.
Yeah. But I'm horrified at how English teachers and special ed teachers. I was just at a conference recently with a whole bunch of special ed teachers, and They're saying, oh, you don't need to teach this stuff anymore. The computer does it for you. And I'm going, you're robbing a whole generation of important experiences. The fact that you don't like a bibliography doesn't mean you shouldn't learn it.
Jerome, I have to research this because I have not seen this happen. I have seen kids doing research papers and handwriting, and my grandson is going, I hate cursive. I hated it so hard. And he's, you know, in California, and they're really pushing it. And when I go to any of the schools, I see all the kids. As a matter of fact, that's part of what's going on with the early childhood, is that they're starting them writing, like in kindergarten, with pencils and pens and so forth. And this, you know, for a lot of those kids, their hand muscles and their finger muscles aren't even ready for it.
Yeah.
So in that case, they're starting them early on writing. So I have to really find out what you're saying.
Come visit me at Marysville, and I'll introduce you to some of the teachers who think it's no longer necessary.
Tell them it is necessary and to get over it.
Thanks for your call, Jerome.
Thank you.
Take care.
Good luck, hon.
Bye.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to talk to Mem Chemfeld. Veronica, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, Veronica.
So
Hi, Ms. Chenfield. It's so wonderful to get to speak to you.
Oh.
And Anne, thank you for this lovely program. This is just so inspiring.
You're welcome.
When Ms. Chenfield comes to the air in any format, I grab my pen right away, but yet at the same time, I'm partially daydreaming because there's such a wealth of information. I wouldn't know where to begin, but I love about the Perkins Observatory and just all the examples you gave at the Columbus Cultural Arts Center. But my son is 12 and a half. And just like you've talked about, there's so much emphasis on these electronic devices and things. And even with a background in education, I can't quite get to the heart of what a 13-year-old might be doing. You know, what are some creative things that you can do? Because I've noticed in the community, you know, it seems like that's where the line's kind of drawn. There's so much for, like, the preschool age child. But yet, what can one do in the city of Columbus?
You know, Veronica.
And thank you for stopping me there.
First, I love the name Veronica.
I do, too.
I haven't, you know, it used to be a big name when I grew up in New York City.
Oh, bless you.
I guess it was from the cartoon, the Archie.
If I ever had a girl, I wanted to name her Veronica.
Right. So it's really nice to hear
icon.
Your name.
It means the true image.
But Veronica, you know, I do the libraries in the summer. And the Columbus Metro Library system is one of the best in the country, you know. I'm sure you know that. But
absolutely.
And it's been, you know, declared that. And in almost every school, the kids who are running the summer program are middle school kids.
That's wonderful. My son is right. Planning on doing that, actually.
Okay, so that is one really good thing to get involved with. Another thing is, you know, those age kids, the middle school teachers who work with that age are just fabulous. They're not normal people, but they are really fabulous people because they can connect with those ages, which are really hard ages to connect with in general,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they're in between everything, you know. I call middle school kids toddlers with hormones.
Exactly. We're on the same page with them.
And I happen to love them. I had a folk dance group at Johnson Park Middle School for 20 years, too, called the Footsteps. Some people might remember because we danced all over the city. I don't have, you know, it's been gone for years, but for 20 years I did that. And they were all middle school kids, and nobody could stand them, and they couldn't stand each other. But anyway, we loved each other, and I see them everywhere. They're in their 40s and 50s now, and we just, you know, that was the best time I ever had. And I said, you were such a pain in the neck, you know. But anyway.
And you survived JP.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, sure.
Well,
Veronica, what I was going to say is those kids, that middle-aged group, are so wonderful when you ask them to do things for younger kids.
Perfect.
They are so great, whether babysitting or they were just volunteering to do something for children who are younger, whether it's take them for a walk or go to a recreation center and say, do you need somebody to be a helper? They really come through a lot.
That ties into the scouting. You know,
yeah, and we don't ask them enough to do that.
Yeah, volunteer work. I found they really
They step up and they go beyond. They're wonderful in giving of themselves. But most people, like they see middle school kids, they just kind of cross the street, or wait till they pass, because they don't know how to handle them. And
that's a wonderful thought, because it leads into everything else that you've been talking about, really. I mean, it gets back to basic old-fashioned values. And, you know, I'm one that truly believes in play and the importance of that. And I'm glad that was brought up, as well as I was, and I'll let you go here, but when Jerome, I believe, or the last caller talked about the handwriting and the lack of emphasis on bibliographies and the spell check, et cetera, you know, we send our son to a Catholic school, and they do get some of that. We had a teacher by the name of Miss Klubach that was a specialist in writing that came in at the kindergarten level, and that's what she dedicated herself to, and they allowed that in the curriculum and so on. They learned the skills up through, I believe, third grade in our school system. But
So what Jerome said is not widespread.
No, and that's interesting to kind of get the pulse on what other people are finding, because, you know, I think, from my opinion, it all starts at home. All these things we've talked about, the school can only do so much. I mean, then it's up to the parents to enhance these other areas.
And you know, Veronica, this is also why community, as Ann said, community has to be aware and involved, because a lot of the kids don't have the intact home that you're describing you have. And so community's got to be there for them and be advocates for them. And yeah, and guarantee that children in that community are going to have experiences that are quality and prepare them and strengthen them.
You're wonderful. I appreciate the time on the air, and I wanted to say thank you. And if you get a chance, either this program or at a future date, tell us a little more about your background. I've listened to you for years, but I'm taking notes about your background at the museum,
etc. You could just Google her. I mean, Google her. I'm telling
yeah.
you. Not, of course,
I don't even know.
She's like, whatever that is.
Yeah, whatever that is. Do you say giggle? Do you say gaggle or giggle?
Yeah,
well, you can just giggle me.
Okay.
Veronica, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you, dear.
We just have a few minutes left. The time flew by again, and which means we just have to get you back on sooner. But you had something that I was intrigued with, your magic vocabulary.
Oh, yeah.
What is that about? We only have 2 minutes.
2 minutes? Well, it's going to be really – you know, the next time I come on, I'll tell you the story of it, because it's a phenomenal story.
Okay.
But I call it the magic – it's like really a concept that I'm sure has many other names. But the magic vocabulary is like every person has – I call it a magic, like areas that you are totally close to, caring about, committed to, fascinated by. Well, just say on your magic vocabulary, it can be anything, a sports team, a rock star, a kind of food, a place you want to go. And these are like your topics. They're your topic. Like I'm like a kid who's on dinosaurs, knows everything mm-hmm. about dinosaurs. That would be on that kid's magic vocabulary.
Okay.
Or superheroes. Or my one of my grandkids knows every single musical group in America. And he it could be another language to me. He'll say, have you ever heard of this? He knows every group. That's his magic vocabulary. His brother, no. His brother is a basketball kid, and basketball is one of the items on his magic. He knows everything about basketball. But if you just say basketball, he's got. So, you know, whether it's a place, like I've got to go to this place, I must go to Hawaii. That is my dream. Hawaii's mm-hmm. on your magic vocabulary, like yours.
Okay.
Oh, sushi, a sushi place opened in my neighborhood. Oh, my God, I've got to go to that sushi. I love. I mean, I wouldn't even go because I'm not a sushi person.
Uh-huh.
But sushi's on so-and-so's magic vocabulary. They're going to go. So this is a key. These are keys for learning.
Okay.
If anything on your magic vocabulary can start you in every aspect of lessons and learning and curriculum. Like we can start anywhere. If you say pizza is on my vocabulary, I can start American history on pizza. I can start math, language, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So magic vocabulary is a concept.
But we got to talk about that again later. You were listening to Mim Chenfield. Mim, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Ann.
Appreciate it.
You're doing such a good job.
Thank you. We have to take off again. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820. NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.